Okay, just like with Gene, I'm also promising Peter a very shorter intro versus Orlando. Many of you know Peter, many of you spent time with Peter, but knowing there's a few of you here that are new to the forum, new to the role, a quick background. You know, Peter leads our global research organization, manages all the folks that cover topics, as we described, you know, from silicon to services, essentially. And he'll talk more about that in his presentation and detail that for you and talk about his plans. Prior to Peter's global responsibilities, Peter had responsibility for a research strategy and research organization in EMEA. And so with that, we'd love to bring Peter up and have him share his strategy with you. Thank you, Peter.
Is there a clicker? Great, because then I don't have to stand up on... No. Is there a playback on the... That's why I need to stand up here. So drop that idea. So thank you. I thought what we would do was in traditional continuation of this session over the last couple of years is update you a little bit on where we are with respect to a few things. Obviously, for those of you that are new to this... our continuous effort is really to balance advice on four different dimensions of research, which you will see reflected at the conference here or generally in what you experience when you work with Gartner. It is the major themes and technologies that are the standard approach to the industry, whether it is servers as a perhaps narrow topic or cloud as a more general and quite difficult to grapple kind of topic, certainly from the perspective of all of you. It is, secondly, the organizational roles. Gene talked a little bit about how we have shifted towards roles that you perform that exist within your organizations, as well as the roles that exist within end-user organizations, ranging from CIO to direct report. And I'll talk a little bit about what Gene alluded to, which is the research structure that we have changed over the course of the last 12 months since we met last. Thirdly, it is vertical industries. And to the question from Ludovic is, we have actually not changed the coverage of the different vertical industries that we've had over the last year. So we continue to cover the three elements of financial services, so banking, insurance, and investment services. We continue then to cover what is retail, manufacturing, although we have expanded, obviously, manufacturing with the addition of AMR, and I'll talk a little bit about the AMR dimension to this. Government, education, and now I'm going to be challenged because I miss one. Media, yes. And energy and utilities, correct. Thank you. It's good to have colleagues that can help here. So essentially our focus continues to be not so much expand the industries, but expand the individuals that we have that cover the different industries, in particular when we feel that there is substantial demand for it. And so we have added analysts in the financial services area. We're likely going to extend that also to add financial services analysts out in Asia, because there's a substantial interest among our user clients in that. The same thing is true with energy and utilities, which has been a significant area of interest. So we continuously look at broadening out the coverage more probably from the perspective of what is therefore the fourth dimension of what we look at, which is to ensure that we continuously evolve the geographic coverage of how we have the analysts placed. And I will talk a little bit at the end of the presentation in terms of where we have added analysts. The actual number of analysts that we have now is 748. And at this stage, on top of that, we have 41 open positions for analysts. So should we be able to fill all of them, which is a constant challenge to find the right people, we would be close to about 800 by that time frame. So bottom line is, I think we have a balance that we continuously try to strike between topic, between role, between vertical industry, and between geography. No different than what you actually are challenged with as organizations in terms of how you balance your product and service portfolio. And so I will never ever, it's something that we strive to reach perfection, but it's an asymptotical journey, right? We will never get there. Because things change very rapidly. We're trying to actually make sure that we optimize as best possible. So the topics I want to talk a little bit about today in that context is what we have changed since we last met. Because we've actually gone through some substantial shifts. What we have done in terms of new methodologies, so I'm not going to talk so much about magic quadrants. If it comes up in questions, perfectly fine. But the bottom line is that we've added some new methodologies that I think is worthwhile for you to understand. And then last, attach a little bit of comment around what we've done organizationally and where we are moving from a structural perspective organizationally, because we continue to sort of fine-tune things, in particular actually gradually move more coverage, to balance out coverage from North America to other regions. Because as most research companies, and you will know this, is that have a predominant portion of people that are based in North America, and whenever the possibility is, we consider whether or not it is appropriately located in either Europe or in Asia. For example, last week we just decided to move 2 open headcounts in the supply chain area from North America to Europe here to start to build up the capabilities of our supply chain business, aka the AMR business. So let me go into the first topic here. One is the integration that we've done, and I'll talk a little bit about this, the Gartner Business Wizard that Gene talked about, and then just some comments around some new themes that we have. The best way of essentially looking at what Gene talked about structurally is really to look at the IT organization as it is built today. Our research needs to be contextual to the roles that exist in the organization and then need to align to the initiatives that are important for those organizations. And that's essentially what we have done with realigning the research to what Gene talked about as being the 45 key initiatives. But those 45 key initiatives, which are relevant to the entire organization, are just different from what they need to do with those initiatives. The CIO will engage in making sure that whatever is launched linked to what is value for the business. The IT leaders are the ones that are the decision makers in terms of buying your products and services. So they're the ones that do strategy work. They're the ones for which the magic quadrant is mostly relevant. And then underneath that, you have what we call the IT professional role, which is where the research that we have acquired from the acquisition of Burton fits in, because these are people that don't do strategy. These are people who are the technical architects that do the technical decisions of how you implement things. And in the hierarchy of the research, therefore, this now becomes contextual to the role, and the way that it's linked together vertically within the overall research structure is then through key initiatives. Now, we've defined 45. This is a living animal, because obviously at some stage one initiative is Windows 7 implementation, which is huge for many organizations. At some stage, everybody's going to be done with that, and so that's not an initiative anymore. And so we track, because as Gene said, people sign up for this. So we can, to the point around data, is we don't have analysts track daily what exactly is done in terms of searches, but what we do track is the aggregation of things that are around the initiatives, and then we have the analysts link into their research agenda to this initiative. So the analyst still continues to look at the world that they look at, but it is aggregated together around a research agenda for which the different pieces of research are tagged to the initiative that the client has and ensures that it is tagged to the appropriate part of that project. Because an initiative is a project. A project has a start and an end date, and the client will be somewhere in that initiative. It could be a virtualization initiative. It could be a mobile application initiative, and so forth. And that's how we have, since we met last, shifted the research so that it is aligned to these initiatives on the user side. That does not mean that all research is linked to the 45 initiatives, because there is then a long tail of initiatives that organizations have that isn't appropriate for us to focus on at the level of detail that we do towards the research to the clients. Okay, so that's what I would argue is our architecture now for research going forward. And over the course of next year, we will make some substantial additions to this as we shift it a little bit. And I'll give you a few snippets of insight to what we're planning on doing as we move forward. So executives, leaders, right? So I talked about the leaders. These are the individuals that take and make the strategic decisions. This is often where the decision maker is, not necessarily the person, the influencer, because that may be the CFO or the CIO, right? So there's a different influencer network, but this is the person that comes up with the recommendation that you ought to buy vendor X, and this is the person that often makes that decision. And then, as I said, Burton, the IT1 product set, is then the one that fits at the bottom of the pyramid. Now, let me just give an interpretation here. It is not literally the bottom of an IT organization, because somebody that loads tapes at night is unlikely going to read research unless the person, you know, sort of wants to. Although there isn't many people that load tapes at night anymore. But nevertheless, that's a long time ago. But nevertheless, it obviously is such that there is a series of individuals underneath that wouldn't be reading research, but we believe this actually touches a substantial part of the organization. And from a strategy perspective, this is where we want to move the research, is relevancy on issues that tie to the entire architecture and then driven towards the contextualization to the different roles that exist. And I'll give you a little bit of an example in a chart that follows. Similarly, what we are now building is a structure that aligns to the chief supply chain officer, and then, frankly, over time, the individuals that sit underneath the chief supply chain officer. Now, right now, the AMR research organization, which is, after we have structured it such that it is the people that talk supply chain, not technology, because for those of you that work in those spaces, you will know that we moved a few analysts from quote-unquote supply chain into what is really the applications group, because what they were looking at were applications. But what we then have are people that really look at supply chain from a business perspective, and again structure it such that they talk to these roles. What you will see us gradually do is build the same architecture, is that those would be structured around the initiatives that are important to supply chain officers, and we will, as we now learn more about that client base, build up what are the key initiatives that they have that should be covered in a similar fashion that an IT organization does. And what we will then be doing is linking these two so that in fact you have a business initiative and then you have a corresponding IT initiative, okay? And this here gives sort of an example, practical, of the approach in terms of contextualization that we will be now working on over the next year, is a CIO on the same topic around how you might treat a particular problem will ask, what's the overall trends in networking and how do I deal with something like that? There will be contextualized research to that CIO. Similarly, well, somebody will then, as an IT leader, say, okay, well, I now need to make a decision, so tell me about the technologies. That's probably where a hype cycle or then a magic quadrant works. And then when you get to the people that have to do the technical implementation, that is then where you would go, well, this is now about what are the technical standards that I have to choose between, what is it actually that would be best practice. Now, I recognize now somebody's going to sit in this room and say, well, that's not exactly what the analyst is doing that I'm working directly with, okay? This is an evolution. We have version one of this in place in terms of structure. And when you look at what we offer to end users now, it is that structure around key initiatives that we have. And we're gradually then moving on fine-tuning research agendas to ensure that this clearly fits across the board, okay? And so structurally what you will get is, and what we now are offering users, is a set of key initiatives that are the key initiatives that they have. What we then also have, and I'll show, you know, and you can see the website over in the demo area if you want to, is that there's a section there that then also allows the user to tell us what are the strategic vendors that they believe are important. And then when do you have a renewal date with that strategic vendor? Because part of the proactive nature that I've been very keen on us moving towards, away from this reactive research nature, is that I want to make sure that we can help users at the time when they actually need the information, which if they have to decide for a software renewal is probably about 3 months before the actual renewal happens. And so if they have told us, okay, well, we have vendor, and I'm going to not mention names, X, Y, and Z, then what we will do is we will basically alert them by whatever means they are interested in. Initially, right now, it's just an email alert that says, here's the links to the documents that we feel are most appropriate for the renewal process that you go through. Those might be generic negotiation documents, so there's no research that you wouldn't see, but this is sort of the structure that we would do. The next thing that we've done is we've implemented a peer networking capability in the user product such that they are able to tell us who they are, what they're working on in terms of initiative, and then link up to anybody who is a user that may work with that particular initiative, which means we've basically taken a social networking approach but inside the firewall of the user environment so that users can safely link up with each other and understand exactly where they sit. That is a capability, a platform, that you will see us use more and more because that is now a separate component which gradually will be integrated with the research such that it will be such that the research actually is related to whatever somebody might link up with somebody else to talk about. Okay? The fourth box here is what we call disciplines. This gives a little bit of snippet as to what we'd like to do going forward, is that some initiatives is actually not a project. It is a discipline that somebody does every year, and what they're really looking for is best practice. This, in essence, is what we do in some of the products that we offer to technology providers, because the marketing essentials material, for example, that is about how do you do best practice from a marketing perspective, or some of the other aspects that I'll talk about a little later in the initiative for technology providers, is really a set of disciplines that is about how can I become better at doing this, and you continuously do this. On the user side, an excellent example of a discipline is something like budgeting. Users do budgeting every year. It comes around every year. You generally forget about how you did it the previous year. And so what we want to do is to ensure that we can provide advice, templates, tools, and structures that allow people to do better budgeting, because an initiative can be something which is actually a discipline. And so that's work that we're doing right now. Primarily or initially for end users that ensure that we can do appropriate coverage for this. And again, there'll be other things which we'll talk about when we're ready to talk about it that we're working on in this space that allows you to, the user to actually perhaps better appreciate and link to what is important to them. The world doesn't anymore resolve on things where people proactively reach out and say, just tell me about whatever is interesting. It has to be related to the project that makes business sense for them to address. So this is an example. But I would encourage you to look at the websites that we have here at the event, is that the business wizard, which is then therefore the technology architecture that delivers this, essentially would allow the clients to identify the top initiatives. And Gene said 80. It's actually 91% of clients that have on the user side that now have signed up for this. And obviously we are, with our client service organization, working on making sure that we get the remaining ones on. More importantly, to data, we now know what the most important initiative is among all of our clients, which is, by the way, cloud. As an initiative, right? Which is a surprise. But the next one is actually interesting because the next one could be actually regarded as a discipline. It's architecture followed by ITIL. as a third one. So there are some disciplines that are important to users in terms of what they're working on. And then, of course, vendors. So we can also tell you which vendor comes up as the most frequent vendor, which I'll leave as an open question because we can do a question session on that later on. But nevertheless, it allows us, in this sense, to customize, be proactive, and generally actually move towards personalization, which shouldn't be a surprise, because that's also what you are doing in your products and services, so it would be natural that we would have to do the same thing. So, set of initiatives, I've talked enough about them. As you can see, this actually is the ranking as it stood, so it doesn't have the actual numbers here, but cloud number one, and then as you can see, enterprise architecture and ITIL, governance cost optimization, and after that it sort of trails into more technical projects like virtualization, data center rejuvenation, application overhaul, and such and so forth. On the technology provider side, so for the roles that are important in your organizations, what we are then doing is equally looking at what the initiatives are that are important, but primarily actually initially focus on what is important from a discipline perspective in a variety of different areas. And so you will see that these are things that you will do within particular roles on a continuous basis. But again, also a set of initiatives here that, again, brand strategy, I mean, you're going to continuously work on brand strategy, right? It's not a project that finishes at any given time. You will also work on go-to-market planning. That's a continuous exercise within your organization. So it's very much linked to disciplines. And then it's targeted towards the particular role products that we offer to you. So this is there's 14 of them. They're structured in a series of groupings here. That there was 14, wasn't there? Nevertheless, it's structured in a set of different aspects of what, again, is discipline, and you will see that reflected in the products. And again, what we're doing is we're targeting the research to that, and over the course of the next year or so, we'll make sure that also there's a continuous delivery, a proactive delivery from our side that ensures that it's there, although many of you do know, from an AR perspective, how to get alerts set up that make sure that you get the research once it hits our website, certainly. If not, sometimes I feel that you guys know it before we do it, that it's hit the website. So that's architecturally what we've been doing over the last 12 months. This has actually been an enormous change management project, and it's not done because I regard this as version 1. I think we know what version 2 and version 3 is, and we will sort of continuously be working on improving this as we go forward. Then we've worked on also making sure that we are better at exposing the major themes in the industry. And part of what you will see coming up, you've seen it in some of the special reports that we issue, and that we attempt to do a better job at promoting these, is to ensure that we cover in aggregate the themes that are important to your organizations. Many of us tend to focus on the individual research components, but sometimes we should focus on the story because there's a continuation. And the story very much in terms of what is important for your organizations are some of these things. And we're gradually going to move towards a theme that is a continuing story in which you can navigate the experience as opposed to necessarily solely search the experience, which is generally what one needs to mix and match both, and some of these are important. These have been the themes that we've treated in more aggregate context over the course of the last couple of, actually the last 10 months or so. So that's what's new on that side. Methodologies, two new things. So this presumes you know the existing methodologies. And if you don't, we can obviously take that as questions earlier on. We talked about this last year as this was an aspiration on our side. We have now launched the Gartner Market Clock. Where does the Gartner Market Clock fit? It essentially fits, because it is like a clock, and what we have always needed, and frankly what you need in your businesses to do a better job of, is to manage your portfolio that sits from 7 o'clock to 12 o'clock. all companies tend to focus on how can we get new stuff out, and then you sort of leave the old stuff sitting there. And, you know, there's not a lot of people focused on what do we do with the old stuff. Actually, most of your cost generally fits in the old stuff. That's true of users as well. And so the market clock is appropriate both for technology providers as a planning tool and as a tool for obviously users. Imagine this way. In the clock, actually maybe I should go to that one so it's bigger, right? In the clock, up at Advantage, that is really where the detail is in the hype cycle, right? Because this is early stage of a technology. Once you get to about 4 o'clock or 4:30, then it's where the magic quadrant is appropriate. Because now you have an established market, and the magic quadrant becomes the appropriate detailed tool that exists. As you get to about 7 o'clock, we would generally find that we retire the magic quadrant, and that's where the market scope fits in. Once it becomes about 8 o'clock, then we didn't have anything to advise users. And so the purpose of the market clock is to serve as a tool as to how the user would move its portfolio of services that it provides its business to plan how they retire appropriately in a particular area. And so you will have seen on Gartner.com is there's a series of market clocks for different market segments, but we're also using it specifically as a planning tool for users to use. We've actually worked with a couple of large technology providers where we have said, let's now take and map your product portfolio into this, and then let's at least have a discussion around a common framework that says, what will we do, what would you do, not us, what would you do in terms of making sure that you appropriately manage out things from somewhere around 8 o'clock so that you don't, at 5 minutes to 12, sit with a lot of products for which users want you to move away from and you haven't really figured out what the appropriate market messaging is or, for that matter of fact, the appropriate approach that you need to take. So this is a new methodology. You'll see us similar to other areas. This would be a frequently updated document. There's not coverage of all areas, but we believe that it does fit to all areas, and each of the analyst groups are now tasked with making sure that we get market clocks in different areas. So I think it's an appropriate tool that sort of fills out. These are some of the areas for which there are documents at this stage around market clocks, and more will then be making it in terms of of research that comes out over the course of the next 12 months. The other thing that we have done is, from a methodology perspective, and obviously methodologies serve a simple way of conveying complex messages. That's really what a methodology is about. You know, one shouldn't make too much out of it, but it is an appropriate and standardized way of working to present something that is complex, which is why it unfortunately sometimes takes too long to get a magic quadrant out. And I will get to that, okay? But what we have not had much of, and which is important from an end-user perspective, is to ensure that we also assist end-users in what is the topic of running IT. Hype cycles, magic quadrants, market scopes, and now the market clock is appropriate for selection and management of technology, but it doesn't do much in terms of how you run IT. And we have a lot of demand from our user clients to make sure that we more appropriately can advise them on how you run the IT once you've actually bought the stuff from you guys. That's what we want to do with the Gartner IT score methodology. Again, I'd encourage you to go over and look at this. It is essentially a series of integrated maturity models that allow the user at the enterprise level to assess their organizational maturity and enterprise level maturity, and then link that to maturity models that exist for each of the organizational roles that report to the CIO. This is an interactive model. Clients can go up and run them anytime they want. So they can call the ones they did. They can do what-if analysis. The output of it is essentially that here's where they are. So it gives them a consistent vocabulary inside the organization. And then it allows them to then understand because we will then tell them, here's the research you need to read to start the process of moving to the next maturity level. And we've had a series of maturity models over the last couple of years. This was launched in September of this year. And we've had an enormously strong reaction among users to this because it allows them basically, as I said, to assess where they are. And so I'm not going to go through the details of this over the next couple of slides, but it basically operates in terms of five stages. There are dedicated analysts in each of the role areas that know the maturity model and generally are the go-to person when it comes to the different level of maturity models. At the enterprise level, it is Colleen Young, who is the person that is the analyst on the enterprise maturity model. But it allows people basically to understand where they are, and it gives them various outputs in terms of rating them for where they need to do improvement, and therefore allow them to understand where they focus. And this is what most people like, is they get a consistent language that they can use to allow them to focus. And all of this is sort of some of the output that gets here. So this is not a different approach to research, because it becomes, again, very personalized. Because the point I've been trying to make here is proactiveness and personalization is extremely important for us as we move forward for any client constituency that we have. What we've focused on with what we've done over the last year is really primarily focused on the end users to start to get that up and running, and this is sort of an indication of that. Last minute, let me just talk a little bit about the organization. Do you want to wait?
I wanted to hit a methodology question.
Yes.
So can you describe how you're going to increase collaboration amongst your analysts in terms of methodology?
You probably need to detail the question more with the example that you're using as a basis for the question. Because you have a particular situation that you're not maybe not, but anyway, can you say a little bit more?
Yeah, I want to understand how the analysts are learning from each other and are sharing information from each other.
Yeah. The reason is that there can be various parts of how you answer this. I mean, I trust that you all understand that's part of a complex thing to do in a global organization. We continuously strive to ensure that we have the right tools that allow the analysts to appropriately collaborate. I trust you all understand that there's an underlying software platform which we have developed over the course of the last many years that ensure that an analyst, one, writes a piece of research, it gets made public, and there is a mandatory requirement to have at least three reviewers on that document, which generally become the team of people among that analyst works with and tend to be the subject matter experts, but may then be based in Asia as opposed to necessarily be based in North America. We also attempt to ensure, but I wouldn't say it works every time, is make sure that if it's such that there is an adjacency requirement to comment, meaning that this may be a question that is in a particular area, but you want somebody in financial, it's a security question, it's a product for security, but you actually want somebody that has banking expertise to comment on this because it probably relates primarily to the banking industry, and you have maybe briefed this banking analyst or want to make sure that that banking analyst has the same position as the core security analysts. We attempt to do that. We internally rate the analyst. In fact, the survey was just launched today, but every twice a year, analysts rate each other on the quality of the peer review that they provide. So we attempt to make sure that this is done in a way in which appropriately you rate that peer review. The system allows for distribution of a document before it's published and reviewed by everybody. There are instances in which it really ought to be somebody who's far in a different area, and sometimes that can be better. Second thing is that We are continuously trying to work on figure out how we appropriately can take material that you guys provide a particular group of analysts, where you assume that those analysts then brief colleagues. And we do have internal document sharing environments that allow people to create environments where they share that. It's improving, but we've got some work to do there. But internally, there's a capability of positioning, for example, a presentation that you may be doing, and ensure that all of the analysts can share that. Any input you guys can give to how we might get better at it is always appreciated, because this will never be perfect, because there's simply too much change happening that we need to continuously work together on ensuring that this happens the right way. Okay? Not sure if that answers your full question, but you know, okay. Mm-hmm. Partly was the answer. So 748 analysts. We have added 18 new analysts in 2010. And we want to make perfectly clear that I don't fudge the numbers. This is not that because we have a CEO that is an analyst. It is not that I have taken the people that resigned and added them to the 18. Right? These are net new adds. And so it is important that you know that is the case. As well, as I said, I have 41 open analyst positions on top of that number. Some of those are backfills for people that have left, right? But in essence, if we were at full non-open headcount, we would be 748 plus 41. Okay? There's a question.
I think you might have just had a bit of that.
Excellent question. I think that, because I look at this every month, I think we have, it's somewhere between 5% and 6%, so I think it's 5.2 or something like that in terms of people that have left. Part of that constitutes people that I wanted to leave, and part of it constitutes people that left of quote unquote their own free will, to be blunt here, right? And we have in a few areas lost some really good people, but generally I think if you have an organization that has on an annual basis a retention of staff at the level we have, that's not bad, I would argue, right? In terms of the acquisitions that we've done, we have, I think, lost two people on the Burton side since the acquisition, which, I mean, again, is relatively good. And in the very beginning of AMR, we lost a few people, but have subsequently not done so. And obviously have, in all instances, we backfilled almost everybody on the AMR side, as well as we have, on top of backfilling whomever left, we've also added about six new positions on the Burton side, of which four of them are here in Europe. Burton only had one analyst in Europe, and once we get them all hired, we will have five analysts, sorry, here in Europe.
Peter, do you know where they go?
Some of them I do because we probably keep contact with them still. They would go to certain technology providers. They have gone to certain user situations. And then if I actually specify technology providers, some go on the consulting side of technology service providers.
Do you maintain relationships through an alumni program?
Each of the different groups manage contact with individuals, and where appropriate, therefore also ensure that when people are ready and we would like that they come back. Like for example, Michael Gartenberg is back. We have very soon a very well-known quote-unquote blogger in the industry that will also come back, and some of you that are active in that space will see that when we can talk about it. So I think we try to manage with the people that we think are good, the right kind of relationships. The last slide I have is this one, so you feel free to ask questions because I don't necessarily need to talk to this one.
In terms of the field of
care function into Brazil, China. Is that your kind of annual plan?
What? Yes. Yeah, good question. I mean, over the course of this year, we have decent presence in, for example, India and China when it comes to technology provider focused analysts. I mean, we have 12 analysts in China. We had at the beginning of the year also 11 or so, don't quote me exactly on the numbers, in India, but they were primarily focused on technology providers. So what we've done is in India first over this year, we've added and still have two open positions, but we have five at some stage. We right now have three end-user-focused analysts. We have one in data center infrastructure that's been brought on board. We have a software ERP analyst that is joining us. And we have a sourcing services guy in India that we have added, and we're still looking for somebody in, if we can find it, in the portal area for India, and if not India, then we'll probably move it to Singapore. Same thing in China. We have in December an infrastructure user-focused analyst that will start, so a senior person there, and will then gradually start to fill out in the areas that we know for which there is most demand when it comes to end-user knowledge. Brazil and the other regions that Gene mentioned is what we'll be looking at doing over the course of the next 12, 18 months.
You've added AMI, and so you're focusing, instead of research, on the chief supply chain officer. What about the CFO? The HR and the customer.
In our EXP, so what really would be the senior leader program that we have had for some time, and have actually improved that more from a best practice group perspective, the HR function, but primarily the HR function that reports within IT, and then over the course of the last 9 months, we have been looking into the CFO function, again, advising CFOs from a perspective of technology. Our job is not to go in and advise on accounting standards when it is, you know, something that we don't have a grounding in, but we believe that there is sufficient information and need and requirement to understand technology investments, and they are substantial enough in organizations now that would warrant that could be an interesting area for us to explore. Is that vague enough?
I just wonder how you deal with topics that seem to be a major issue on the business side, but when you talk to technology, you know, IT leaders, essentially, it seems like they hope more of the issues is taken care of itself because it's complex to deal with. There's a good example in the chemical specialty industry where you have a REACH regulation that calls for major changes in the supply chain. It's a huge issue for the business side, but when you speak to IT leaders, they seem like they don't know this problem exists. So are you more inclined to taking the position of the business and trying to help organizations understand what the issues are, or are you going to align with the IT leaders and help have the problem go away?
Well, I think if it's such that you align with IT leaders that hope it goes away, then you're aligning with the people that likely will go away themselves. Because if it's such that you don't, I mean, and you guys experience this every day, is that unless you have a substantial grounding in what's happening from a business perspective when you are in IT, you likely will survive both organizationally and, for that matter of fact, also personally. This is why when I started out, I said we have to balance what essentially are four different dimensions, of which I would say what we're the way we address this is through the vertical industries team, which, you know, we're close to having 100 analysts in the vertical industries space. We do not, to be, you know, completely honest, we don't have somebody that covers oil and gas. But essentially what we're trying to do is to make sure that we appropriately can cover different vertical industries when it comes to both the technology choices, but actually primarily how the business impacts what people do from a technology perspective. And therefore, the analysts that we bring on board tend to be people that primarily have a background from a business perspective, having, for example, led very, very large technology projects. We've over the course some of the positions we've added here we added somebody in social and human services in our government practice who is actually in this case a U.S. position, but is somebody who was the state CIO of Oregon, but was an expert in that. We have hired somebody in the defense field, somebody that has done defense ERP and large IT projects in the defense area to particularly deal with security clearance issues and stuff like that. So this person, for example, has the level of security clearance that allows them to go in and talk to that. And that's how we gradually sort of expand out the portfolio of understanding the different business areas that impact technology.
Peter, at risk of cutting further into Mark's area, I wanted to ask a question that one of our attendees asked this morning about the consumer research agenda. So I'd love for you to comment on that because that was
okay.
On that chart.
Yes. So we reorganized the consumer team at March timeframe and took the coverage on the technology provider that was primarily related and directed towards consumer areas that were found in multiple research groups and put most of it, not all of them, most of them together in one group, then opened up a two additional headcounts for senior individuals that could tie the research together from a perspective of consumer strategy. It is a requirement, and certainly from a technology provider, to ensure that we evolve that so that we can respond to, I'm looking at Eva, the ones that are in this room that are primarily focused on the consumer area, well, not primarily, but have the consumer area as an important revenue stream. I think we now have the research agenda somewhat nailed down, and what we will be looking at over the course of the next 12 months is really to move that agenda forward so that we appropriately can cover that area and ensure that we cover that dimension without necessarily going in and being an advisor to consumers. That is not our role, but we do need to understand from a technology provider strategy what is important, which is why we needed to put these different teams together in an appropriate structure that allowed us to do the right thing there.
Thank you, Peter. Great job.